today we've got Renee with us. Renee is one of our designers, and Renee lives in the Philippines. How are you doing, Renee?
I'm good. How are you, Cormac?
Yeah, very good. Delighted to get this going and get the first one started. We had a false start with Crystal, and then she's now moving to Australia, so she's off the radar for a few days.
Happy to zone in here with you.
That's great. So, Renee, do you want to tell us a wee bit about yourself? Just a quick introduction to yourself.
Okay. Well, my name is Renee Perrine, and I'm originally from Manila, and I moved to the provincial part of the biggest island of the Philippines, called Mindanao, in the heart of Mindanao, right in the middle, where all the watersheds actually are existing right now. All the primary rainforests are still there. And through the years, we've noticed the massive depletion of the forest from deforestation, illegal or legal logging concessions. And for the Filipinos, they still use firewood as their fuel. So we've been noticing that a lot of trees have been cut. And it's really sad to see, right, and experience, because the forest is what we need. Is that's where we observe things. The wilderness is where the wildlife lives, and we live in constant interaction with the wilderness. And once you start depleting those sources, that everything just diminishes in the natural patterns and processes of the area, starting with water. And so my husband and I, we decided to put this foundation up called Hinuluban, which means it's an epic story of the mother tree of the rainforest that sustains the cycle of all life. And we work with the seven tribes of Bukidnon. We have seven tribes there. The eighth is bounding the next province of Iligan. And they've been the original owners of the land. And they've been pushed back by the immigrants and the government to the forest. And whether they take care of it or not, it hasn't been good for downstream effects of, let's say, soil erosion, all that. So we've been doing some reforestation efforts with some tribes and have been very, very successful. The thing is that when you look at their lifestyle, since they were before in the plains, and then they were pushed up to the mountains, so they don't have the same connection as before. They used to just be nomads of planting, slash and burn, and exhausting the land. And since they had so much land before, they would just move to the next and the next, right? They were like nomads. They weren't really domesticated in one spot. So when you do that up in the slopes, when you do slash and burn, it burns the next line of trees. Every year, they'll just keep on burning. So that's another negative effect that we have with human inhabitants in the forest. So we decided to help them have a little bit more of permanence in one area. So how do you teach the people to nurture the space that they're in and enhance it further and connect it to the forest right behind them? So the first thing that they need, obviously, is food, water, a place to live, and then a main crop and reforestation, right? During COVID time, I was following Jeff Lawton on Instagram and YouTube. And then I wanted to ask him and consult with him about several things about growing grain, because we do have this heirloom grain called adlai, and It was just an hour conversation, but at the end of the day, he said, "You know, Renee, I have this course that's coming up. It's a 1-year course, the PDC course, so you should attend it." And it changed my life, Cormac, to view it that way and to understand, have this big understanding about nature and how we have to live with it and not against it, and how we need to give this daily attention to for our own survival, not only the indigenous people. So that's how I got into it. Now I'm stuck.
It happens as all.
I
So,
really am. So I feel that the need for this education to be given out to especially my fellow Filipino countrymen. So I'm putting up the school in our farm called Tuminugan Farm Permaculture School. So we're doing the curriculum. The dorm is ready, and we'll be accepting applicants, hopefully starting with the farmers, the ones that can pay can subsidize the farmers. So that's how we're going to approach it.
very good. So, were you in the 29 PDC 2020? Was it? What year were you in? What year did you do
What's
yours?
today? 20,
26.
2021.
Right. So I was registered on the 2019 PDC, but I didn't
How
finish
was it
it.
for you?
I enjoyed it.
Oh,
Again, like you,
yeah.
it does change your perspective and everything. I'm in a completely different circumstance. I'm in a small, like, urban garden. So for me, I'm limited in what I can practice, but it's still, as you say, it opens your mind, it changes your mind. And just I like the format of it, just the sort of the weekly classes. And you could participate every week if you wished, and if not, you could catch up. And then was the final design exercise was a good exercise. Now I missed the hands-on aspect of it, but one day I'll probably do a hands-on PDC if I get a chance. So you discovered then, but you said you were already thinking in this way, and then you discovered permaculture. So it was
Yeah, you know,
permaculture's
it's sort of
solution.
like it's permaculture. Obviously, if you observe nature and try to work with it, then you'll get to understand all the principles in time through mistakes and trials and errors. That's how, because you know we're very proud people, right? So we think we know everything, but nature is the one that teaches you. However, when I learned to apply the principles of permaculture, learning from Jeff Lawton and other permaculturists online, it just made so much more sense. It gave me structure, and you never see the landscape the same again. It's like everything's wrong now. We have to change this. So you have this whole like avatar, you know, perspective of life, like a film of understanding in front of you. And when you're traveling through the islands here, you're like, this should be that, and that should be there. The pond, why is that pond there? It should be down here. Sometimes it hurts my head traveling. And when you see something working, you're like, wow, this is amazing. People should see this example or this model. So putting up models and opening people's eyes and minds to see the world in a permaculture way, in a permanence, a landscape of permanence, is just very, very riveting for me. You know, I think that's the word.
Yeah, I can understand. You do look at things completely different. And did you so when you done the PDC, you already had enterprises on the farm. Did it change to doing the PDC change the way you operated as a business and operated
Oh,
in this
definitely.
time?
Well, first of all, my kitchen garden is now beside my kitchen. You know, growing up, I thought, you know, this is your house and the farm should be far because it's smelly. You get what I mean? So That's and then you realize that if you know how to take care of your waste properly, it's actually part of the nutrient cycle. And the closer the kitchen garden is to your house, then the more you'll tend to it. It just makes sense, right? Before, I would probably visit the vegetable garden like 2 or 3 times a week. Now it's like daily. Right? So it's prettier now.
That's one of the biggest things I learned from the PDC was like the you have your garden on the way to tend your chickens, so you pick your eggs up, and then when you're walking back, you pick your vegetables up, and you're in the house and
It's
tying all
amazing,
them
yeah.
elements in the same place. It makes sense, and just working as humans within that environment, it changes your perspective and everything. And I always put that in, try and put that into my designs whenever I can. Well, you have to put it in, so it's I'm always thinking about it.
It makes life easier, and the web of all the elements, the positioning of all the zones, the elements of sunlight and wind. It's really the strength of what permaculture is all about, permaculture design is all about. Now, most people have a very segregated way of viewing production, especially the industrial agriculture students that come to our farm as on the job training. We have OJTs that come and they're really blown away about the mindset, the thinking, the analyzing, the planning, the design of permaculture compared to the industrial one. Like, for them, they're taught that to make chickens or eggs, you'd have to learn how to be either a breeder or a hatchery. And then you wait for the feeds to come, right? A broiler, and they're all segregated. So the farmer doesn't actually learn how to farm. They just learn how to be part of the chain, right? While the integration of animals into the farming system, it's like right now I view farms. If you don't have animals in the system, it's not a farm. You get what I mean? So, and I love the integration. Even the eggshells are made into calcium phosphate. The manure is added into the compost. It's hard to get phosphate in the compost unless you have chickens, right? Or bats. The guano had the manure of the bats also have that. So you can design bat houses near your kitchen garden, because we have lots of bats in our space. So it makes you feel like Pocahontas after a while. It's nice. It's a lot of fun, and it's also good for the mind and the soul. So putting it all together, I wish everybody would take permaculture really.
Yeah, it's good now. I think it's becoming more popular now, and I think we just have to take responsibility ourselves and teach our kids and do what you're doing yourself is teach people and bring them on site and show them. Was there any what you mentioned the kitchen garden? Was there any major changes to your commercial side of your operation? Would there be a good
The
example of
commercial
some?
side, yeah. So, for example, when we grow this grain, it has to be grown upland near the forest by with a lot of rain, because this grain, this heirloom ancient indigenous grain, it's called Adlayer. In around the world, it's scientifically named Job's tears or Jobi Croix lacrima, and it's a superfood and it has a very, very big potential. For the worldwide market, it has the nutrient density of adlai is higher than quinoa, so and has lower glycemic index. So it's very, very good carb or carbohydrate for people that have diabetes or who want to lose weight. And also, it gives a lot of energy. You don't need to eat a lot of it, and the caloric intake is very little compared to even couscous. So, or amaranth or farro, we made a big comparison. Actually, a very interesting crop. It's been in the Philippines for like forever. That's why it's indigenous, and the indigenous people use that to eat. Most of the rice are lowland rice activities or growership, while adlai is highland, and that's where the indigenous people live in the nearby near like, the forest, like the buffer zones of the forest. So, in terms of commercial, that's what my first question was with Jeff. How do you do it in a commercial landscape? So the first thing is zero silt should leave the land, right? So you look at your terrain. You have to have a catchment basin of the water that's going to come down because it may come down with silt. You have to design and plan the edges. Definitely, you can forest the edges, especially the gullies, as permanence. You can even surround the growership or the acreage, as you say, but hectareage in ours, with food forests. And then we have what we call alley cropping now. So every other, like maybe 5 meters or 10 meters, you'll have an alley crop of either flamingia, depending where, vetiver. You can use lemongrass, we call tanglad here, and calliandra. It's a tree-like shrub. I think Jeff uses lucina. He always says lucina. This is a same like lucina. It's a nitrogen-fixing indigenous. Actually, it's a nitrogen-fixing tree-like shrub that's very good for chop and dropping. And we've recently discovered this past couple of years ice cream bean as well. So just a combination of that. So you use that to keep the soil there. You do minimal tillage or none if you can. You can do tillage once. We use in smaller areas pigs to do the tilling, to remove all the very hardy, unwanted grasses. We have an acidic grass that is called kogon here, or talahib, that has this very, very thick network of rhizomes that if you pull the kogon in one area, it'll grow back very, very easily because it's connected to the rhizome in the next bunch of grasses, right? So, but the pigs, they do an amazing job of removing these grasses, eating them all up, even the rhizomes, and also leaving their manure behind, and also they do natural terracing. So they're amazing animals to work with and observe how they can be integrated to the permaculture side of things is just amazing. So if I had we're starting this, which I call slow by slow. You have to do it small first and prove it, because the people here, they don't like to be anywhere, actually, they don't like to be dictated. This is what to do. That they want to be safe in their old practices, right? Whether it's using herbicide or using a tractor, because for them it worked before, it's easier. But there's this consciousness right now that's actually enveloping the world, knowing that the GMOs and all these chemical fertilizers and pesticide, herbicide use is just not doing good for not only the soil but also our health, because we're very connected to the soil. Like our microbiome in the stomach is connected to the biodiversity in the soil. So there's this awareness that's coming out now. It's like, it's sort of like innate in people. We just have to spark it, I think. So I believe that the bigger effect that permaculturists can do, aside from designing people's properties or your own, is being a beacon of hope, an example in the world, a bright one, you know, to let your love shines, and people will get attracted to it, and then later on we'll have this what we call ripple effect, right? And patterning the landscape from one property to the other, connecting the wilderness. I mean, I'm just so excited to see it sort of like paradise on earth one more time, hopefully, you know. How about you?
Yeah, I think particularly the, you know, with the GMOs and the way that they affect indigenous populations, that basically that, you know, they're removing the heritage seed and then giving them fertilizers and this whole big industry around it. It's shocking, and I'm glad to see that people are reversing that and starting to say, right, we need to feed the soil, and seeing, right, you need more nutrition. So if the soil's healthy, your food's healthy, and seeing that connection that we're eating a lot of dead food with no life that's traveled a long way. So for me, it's getting people to even eat a wee bit of food, just even a lettuce that they've grown in their own backyard with living, healthy soil that hasn't been tilled. A live soil, and the taste is unbelievable, and then that gets you a wee bit of nutrients and sort of gets you hooked, and hopefully then people take a step further. They say, hold on a minute, that lettuce I buy from the shop is devoid of all nutrients and it's disgusting. This lettuce that I grew out my back is really tasty. There's actually a flavor to it, and when you tend your garden using permaculture, you get that taste and flavor back and connection back to the land, instead of all just sort of living in concrete jungles and getting handed rubbish. That's sort of and that's just the way I think our society is going after. It's like a sign of wealth, sign of aspiration, that you don't need to grow your own food anymore, when you're actually, it's a big disconnect. Like, we are nature ourselves, therefore why would we live in disconnect with it? We have to be out there, part of it, and it has to be easy, and permaculture makes it easy, makes it sustainable. And you say the example of the kitchen garden, you're in it every day now, you're looking at it every day, it's just become part of your life. and that's just it. You don't think about it twice anymore. So that's what I like to encourage and tell people. It's just start off a wee bit, just do a wee bit, and then do it wherever you're at. If you have a balcony, do it in a balcony. You're lucky enough, you have a larger scale property. I can do it in my small property. So it's just do it where you are. And so that's my view on it. So so after you've done the PDC, you've changed the way you operate. So would you have any advice for those looking to get educated and do a PDC? Sorry for the answer, but
You know, there's a lot of information out there. Obviously, to get Bill Mollison's book is a treasure. But at the same time, who's going to explain that to you? It's really very, very deep and intense, and setting out examples as well for people to see. It really broadens their perspective of what permaculture really is about. They have a confusion of, you know, what I like about permaculture also is how you structure the people on your farm. There's a big divide of the rich and the poor here in the Philippines. I look Spanish. I'm Spanish Filipino. So I came from that colonization time. My roots are from that, and I really feel bad actually because. Not only the whole idea before was to introduce Christianity and Catholicism, but at the same time, it really disrupted the connection of the indigenous people to Mother Nature. You know how indigenous people worldwide, they all have this generational appreciation of Mother Earth, right? They have this strong connection to their land. And the first thing the Spaniards did was actually remove them from the forests or from their space and put them in what we call reducciones, reducing them reducing them into a space just to be taught another religion. And then of course you know, they were doing trading all over the world. The Spaniards were doing that, the Chinese as well. So when you put people in one area, then you'd have to now build, let's say, your church or grow some sugarcane for trade. That's where that sort of like industrial farming already started, cutting the trees to make big scale agriculture, and then the industrial or green revolution also arrived here in the Philippines with Americans, and the Americans, you know, like Texas and Ohio, like that, they have very, very flat lands. So this is where distilling happens, and you don't have a lot of people in the Midwest, right? The farming capitals of the US. So here there's a lot of people, but we don't have flat land. So that kind of agriculture is very destructive in tropical islands, because we're all, our landscape is Ridge Sharif, you know, from the highest point to, it's all connected. But so if it's all exposed and the rain falls down, because we're in a tropical rainforest, if you don't have your land covered, then all that soil ends up in the river system, the creeks, the ponds, the streams, and then silts everything, including the coral reefs of the sea, right? So then not only are you destroying the agricultural system, but also the fisheries. And we are 7,101 islands here in the Philippines. So imagine that kind of really critical destruction that you have here. So my goal, I think, in life right now is to just at least give the awareness of covering your land. Start small, but observing that, and then creating this web or ripple effect from one community to the other. So I don't know. Do you feel the fire in me? I feel like going back to the farm now. What am I doing in the city? We've got OJTs coming from a university, so I'm excited to you know, connect with them and start explaining what this is all about, and see the, you know, the light in their eyes of this youth, this next generation of agriculturists. I'm excited to put up the school and work with the community. We're going to do a census around, like, find out what do people eat, and we'll grow it. And so we have an immediate market, like, right outside our farm. Excited to do that, and integrate the cows with the electric fence that I got, you know, those, so you can cell graze them. Because right now in the Philippines, what they do is they tie their animals and they move them around. So each animal is like 30 minutes a day. So in the permaculture design, it's like, it doesn't make sense, right? So you if you have 2-3 animals, that's like an hour and a half of your day just moving them around. So that, but with cell grazing, you can have more animals in a smaller space, and grazing them daily, 30 minutes for like 10 cows. So I'm so excited to teach that, you know.
Well, that's a lot of, Joel Salatin does a lot of that, doesn't he?
I'm sorry?
Have you heard of Joel Salatin?
Yes, Joel, yeah,
Salatin. Poly,
we pronounce it here Salatin, but yeah, Salatin. He's amazing.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I've learned so much about, it's like, why are they doing that? And I saw Joelle's regenerative agriculture even before I got introduced to Jeff Lawton or permaculture. And I was wondering if that's possible here, because we have a lot of predators, snakes and civet cats and these bayawaks. I don't know what you, it's like lizards, huge lizards that can eat, you know, it's different, no? Tropical areas is different from like huge farmlands, tracts of lands. And we're mostly in a slope. So I tried that with a portable chicken coop, you know, that you move around with a net, and it was knocked down by some kind of animal, and it turned sideways and all the chickens left and they were eaten by the civet cats and the snakes. So it's really different here. The way we do it here is we have our chicken coop in zone one, not or even beside or even zone zero, because they're sometimes underneath their houses eating the termites. We have lots of ants and termites in the Philippines. So the soil here is very porous. And so when it rains too much, what happens, it becomes drenched and then becomes anaerobic with all that water. So then the insects all come out. And that's why we have our houses on stilts. And then the chickens are underneath and they eat all that inside of your house or your food upstairs. It's different. It's interesting. So the zoning here is a little bit different, but it still makes the principle of design is still the same.
Yeah,
yeah.
Well, that makes a lot of sense. Who wants bugs in the
yeah.
house?
Yeah.
So as an entrepreneur yourself, you have businesses. You had businesses before permaculture. So one of the reasons for starting this basically was for myself finishing the PDC, wanting to be self-employed, wanting to work in permaculture. I was thinking, right, well, what could I do? So I was doing some design work. So we started with a couple of others doing the design work. But would you have any advice for people looking to pursue a career in permaculture about where they start or what they do after they get a PDC and how they would get into business? Or
Yeah, you can. I mean, even just 72 hour PDC, it'll open your mind already to the thought process, the design, critical design thinking of permaculture. Like, for example, during COVID, a lot of people were stuck in their homes and apartments and all that, and you can start with your herbs in pots. You can have little rabbits as well or in your garden, which will mow your lawn, right? And give you meat. You can have, if you don't have much of a garden, you can invite the wilderness into your, let's say your veranda, what do you call that? The balcony of your apartment with a bird feeder. You know, there's so many things, just not producing that much waste. Is amazing. I heard that in Belgium there was 2,000 homes in one municipality, and the governor or mayor, I don't know who it was, somebody in the government had this brilliant idea of giving 3 chickens per home with a small coop. So, and instructed the household that after you eat this food, don't throw it in the trash bin, but give it to the chickens and they'll eat it. And so they were able to reduce 100 tons of waste in a year from 2,000 homes. That's amazing, right? That's applying permaculture principles. You don't have to have a farm or a big tract of land, right?
Yeah, so, it's completely daft. I heard Joelle mention that as well, that basically it's a it was sort of like you put your food scraps in a truck and it uses diesel to drive away and you think you're being green. That's a fact. You throw it to a couple of chickens.
And it's gone.
And it's gone. It's illegal for me to do that here because of bird flu. It's crazy as it seems.
Oh, really?
We're not allowed to feed kitchen scraps. And it's just absurd. So if I harvest a lettuce out the back and I take a bite, I can legally throw it to my chickens. But if I take that piece of lettuce into my kitchen, I'm not allowed to feed it to my chickens. That's just that's so bizarre.
Wow. That's how bad it is. That's how much disconnected we are. Imagine if all the law, the ones that do the laws in the world would understand permaculture, it'll be a better world, don't you think?
Without sounding too conspiratorial, I think the laws are set up so you're not connected to nature, so you're reliant on them.
Yeah.
So they don't want you having your own chickens. They want you to feed into the system. So then you're paying taxes. You're building the economy, the paper economy, all this paper money. You're keeping that going. They don't want you independent and sorting yourself out with no money flow or that's and that's the way
It's
they want
funny
it because.
because yeah, like our farmers, when let's say there are livestock people, for example, and then if they don't grow their own vegetables, they earn the money and they spend that money to travel and put fuel in their motorcycles and travel 30 minutes to the next town to buy vegetables and chicken from that system. You know, some of them are even like the onions. I don't understand. We have a problem with onions and garlic and tomatoes in this country when we can grow it ourselves. And there's a shortage here. It's really funny. And it's all about this trade wars with imported vegetables from China. So, yeah. So just the awareness of that alone, when I told the farmers, hey, I'll show you how to grow your own cabbage or lettuce or whatever, the local indigenous crops, not lettuce, but like pechay, we call it pechay here. Where it won't wilt or be eaten, the soil is healthy, there's no the ricocheting of the drops of the rain. That's what they're frustrated about. The soil is enhanced. I'll show it to you. And it takes a lot of churning in their mind to realize that, yeah, what am I doing putting fuel every so like months later they're like, okay, Ren, they call me Ren here. Okay, Ren, you can teach us now. You know? Because
So you're going through a process then of you've done your course, you've realized this, and now you're teaching others. How are you finding that process to get them to change their mind from the doing the
it's a
traditional
very,
farming?
very it's like a turtle process. You cannot bombard these people who are not willing to change or listen. Like I said, nobody wants to be told or dictated what to do. Especially the Filipinos are very, very tired of being dictated to, right? So
Aren't we
I
all?
want to, yes. And especially here, because we're, you know, poverty stricken, they say the calamities is what makes us poor, but I really don't believe in that. I believe in the power of community, the power of the voice of a group of people. The Filipinos here, you know, we like to do things together. In the West, you know, you hardly even know your neighbors, but here it's like you can't rear a child without the tribe. You know, we pass around the child because then, hey, I'm gonna just, you know, wash my clothes. Here's my daughter. You know, can you take? Yeah, sure, no problem. It's like this, you don't even ask. You just hand over the child. So we work together better as a community. So, or the ones with common unity, community. So, we have to first get rid of like our grievances towards each other. We have to understand and know how to communicate so that when you say things, it's not painful, you know, and not dictatorial. You have to just say like, hey, what do you think if we try this instead of like, okay, guys, today we're planting pechay. You know, it's a whole different approach that I'm learning also because you're trying to in it's like reintroducing to them what's innate in their DNA of being self-sufficient, of being and a part of nature that enhances it, not destroys it, because we're very extractive in our agriculture, and we're very extractive in our ways. Even for us to get from point A to B, we put a cement road, which is blocking the mycelium system network of the soil, right? But if everybody grew their vegetables in the community, you'd have less of this travel or need for the road system. You know, they think development is infrastructure like bridges and roads, but I believe We just have to develop our own spaces to be self-sufficient communities so that we don't have to be traveling the world or moving produce from one side of the world to the other side of the world in volume, right?
Yeah, I think it's about, I think you have to be realistic and embrace what you can grow in your area. And then the likes of the roads, build the roads properly so that there's proper water catchment off the roads. So then that water then can then be treated because of the dirt in the roads, the rubber, and then it can be filtered throughout the land properly. It can be slowed down. So that's one of the things I learned in the PDC as well, was like using what you have. So if you have to build a road from A to B, make sure it's designed properly and laid properly, not just a big straight line. It has
Definitely.
To be the runoff is right. And yeah, it's just
and
been
it can
real
be an encatchment space for water too, right?
Yeah.
You can direct the water to the canal, and you can use a canal. We call it canal here. You can, but in permaculture, we call it swales. You can actually put the road beside the swale and have a tree growing system. So you have beautiful roadsides with trees that are just being fed by that water of the canal, because you're harvesting that water. But I mean, it's mind-blowing.
Which in turn protects the road and flood and in extreme circumstances, extreme, like you get cyclones there as it is. So extreme weather events, it protects the road. The road doesn't get washed away because it's built properly. It's built on, as you say, it's built on contour. It makes sense. So and then back to the trade, you grow what you can grow in your area. Maybe your area grows something better than down the road, but then that's where the trade occurs. But it's building all these links, and shipping food around the world is just crazy. Especially I seen the thing the other day about was it something like bananas or pineapples picked in Thailand, and it was shipped to Argentina for packing, and then it was shipped to the US. It was like, what?
It's crazy. Yeah, it's really crazy. First of all, like here, naturally, as friends, you know, we have bioregions. So our bioregion, we have a lot of coffee, and adlai, and and bamboo. It's because of the rainfall, the soil, and what indigenous crops have been there for the longest time, right? So that's what we grow. We grow a lot of root crops as well. Taro, which we call lutia, gabi, and those are the native indigenous crops, ginger, turmeric, that yacon. Have you heard of yacon?
Yeah.
It's an amazing root crop that when you make it into a syrup, it lowers your blood sugar if it's high, and then it increases it if it's low. It's a natural fructose. Anyways, so you have all these beautiful indigenous crops, but then 30 minutes down from our area is half the elevation, and they grow different beautiful stuff like avocados and coconuts and mangoes and let's say sugar cane, cassava. All these, they even have this miracle fruit, like a berry that turns everything sweet. It's called magic berries in our place, you know. So when my friend comes up to our farm, or when we go there, we barter. And especially during COVID, that was the thing, you know. Hey, I don't have a job, but I have avocados, a lot of them. What do you have? You know, it was a great exercise for a lot of us in the Philippines during COVID. And I think now is the right time for people to embrace permaculture even more.
Yeah, I think it's the tide starting to change. And on a more positive note, it is. I think more people are realizing, even here I am now, they're opening up a big permaculture farm, and it's the local councils getting involved in it, and it is they're trying to get people to grow in their garden, and it's a great solution for poverty. I live in one of the, it's like a economically deprived area, and when you look around all the greenery, it's grass, it rains, it's I'm in a temperate climate here, so you can grow with season extension stuff. You can grow, like you have a great growing season, But there's people in poverty and there's people that go into food banks. That's crazy. And it's like they could grow their own food quite cheaply. And this needs to be rolled out. So I think that the local council is going that way. So what's your plans? Have you any big plans now for the next few years? What was
to confirm aside from teaching it, I really want to see it, this permaculture being applied in the island tropics, because we have beautiful small islands here that can be off grid and planned sustainably, and that will be enhancing more and be part of like an agri eco, natural tourism. You know, our country is so beautiful. We shouldn't be poor. We should be what paradise is to most people. You know, when people come to the Philippines, they're attracted because of the foliage, the flora, the fauna, the sights, the smells, the water. Water everywhere. We have rivers and lakes and beautiful diving areas. So we have to preserve the islands and the midlands and the highlands and our watersheds. I really want to, before I die, have some kind of influence that way, whether it's small or big. I just won't stop my mouth.
Well, keep going and keep at it, and that's all you can do. So where can listeners find you, or are you online? Your social media.
I just have my personal Instagram account, which it's really just personal. It's Renee Perrine or Renee A. Perrine on Instagram, and on Facebook it's my full name. But we do have a community on Facebook which is called Tuminugan Farm Permaculture School. So there's a lot of local members there. I started over COVID just giving advice on how to plant all these indigenous vegetables to sustain themselves over COVID, and it helped a lot of people. And over COVID we also built the school. So after I'm done with the curriculum, which is for the Philippine tropics or for the tropics, because it's like I mentioned a while ago with the chickens, it's really different from other areas, you know, other landscapes in the world. So yeah, we'll be launching the school, and we'll get some farmers nearby, hopefully first, and then the people, whoever wants to learn permaculture, to apply it in their own landscape, their own land, their own properties, you know, or homes, or even something to teach their own children and how to survive. It's like life skills, you know. It's really important. So 7 to 10 or 12-day courses is what we're going to be doing soon. I also want to engage more with the youth, like make a permaculture and maybe a game app. That would be great, right? Or apply artificial intelligence and like avatar, like before and after, you know, so that people can be, oh, that's what permaculture is all about. Okay, I'm in. Let's do this, right?
Yeah.
So those are sort of like my big broad stroke plans. But within this month is starting off with the OJTs, the on-the-job training people. So that's about it. I'm on the farm pretty much all the time, and we have tours on Saturdays, which I give myself. We have a place to stay, so that's tuminuganfarm.com as well. We have different price points, you know, like high-end farm living homes to backpackers on that you know, can't afford but can also have access to the farm and nature. So yeah, people are coming for retreats and reunions and just chill or find themselves again. So please do come. You'll see me there. Go travel here, Cormac. It might be cold there.
Yeah,
it's nice and warm here all the time.
I think the Philippines gets a bad reputation for travel. But I grew up at the tail end of the Troubles in Northern Ireland, and a lot of people wouldn't come visit. I'm like, there's nothing wrong with it. It's okay. I wouldn't bother me going there and visiting. I just thought maybe when we get a design or two in, we can use that and come visit.
So since my focus is on education, I decided to partner with you guys, right? VinePermaculture.com, and this is where we can service people, a lot more people, on how to design their properties in a permaculture way. People might think it's expensive here, especially because it's on a dollar rate, international rates or whatever. We can always discuss discounts, there's no problem. But the thing is that it's gonna save you time and money if it's actually designed by someone, unless you want to learn it yourself or make the mistakes yourself like I did in the long run. Believe me, you have to have some consultancy at least with us so that you can not do the mistakes and start off in the wrong foot. I mean, like I have some neighbors here and they were digging their pond and it was like on the middle of the ridge, right? Instead of the catchment area, and they spent so much money on that already, or fencing. Now they have to cover that and redo it, right? So you're wasting money. You can't direct water where it doesn't naturally flow. It doesn't make sense. So they have to redo it. So that's twice the time that you need to, again, dig, cover, replant, dig again, for the pond or the reservoir. And number one thing in planning is water. So if you don't have a good catchment system in your space, then you're wasting your time from the get-go. If you're fencing, oh my gosh, fencing here, people want to fence like white picket fence. Hello, guys, we're not in North Carolina. We're in the tropics. We use whatever is needed to do fencing here. Like for example, we have what we call bamboo tinik, right? And or the crown of thorns of bamboo. And if you plant it near each other, then it becomes like a solid fencing, impenetrable fencing. But then you can also harvest it and have construction material. So the principle or the ethics of combining systems and uses in trophic levels, or what we call here patong patong, or one on top of the other, right? So there's 10 purposes in whatever you're doing. You're not wasting time. You're adding yield wherever you're going. So it's not just because there's a lot of landscape designers, beautiful landscaping, but man, the expense of that, and why go all the way up there or down here, when you can make pathways that go with the landscape and the terrain, and it'll be easier for people to traverse in our ridge to reef kind of landscape here, instead of making it so difficult for your neighbors, your guests, your tourists that come to your place, stuff like that. So it's really, really worth it. Take a look at vinepermaculture.com and see our packages there. But mostly, mostly, it'll be fun consulting at least. Let us come to your area, talk to you about the space that you have there, give you some inspiration, hints on what can be done in a general scheme of things. And then the most exciting part is when we start designing, and we have a whole team behind us with Crystal and Cormac and Callan, who are very well educated and learned and wise about permaculture design. So you have them and the tropical brain of mine put together. Oh my gosh, you'll have the best master plan. Right, your own master plan that you can show off to everybody, which will really change the world. Be this example, be the light in your space of permaculture, and let's connect one property to the other to create paradise again here on Earth, right? So that's where you can find us to vinepermaculture.com.
Yeah. And we also have a free special ed program as well, like a youth education program. So it's vinepermaculture.com/special-ed. And we also run the free classes, the lunchtime learning, 20 minutes every week. If you just want to check it out on YouTube, it's at Fine Permaculture. Renee, thank you very much for your time today. It's been very enjoyable, and it's great to hear your story and
Yeah,
all the
my
things you're
pleasure,
doing.
really. And I and do email me also at Renee at my per, perma, my personal farmer dot net. Yeah. All right.
That's
Thank you,
great.
Cormac, also for your time. It's been a pleasure talking about permaculture. Have a beautiful evening and a good day for me.
Good day, cheers. Cheers.